U.S. Senate stands up to China.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Ally Bank, offering Pop Money, a way to pay other people online by sending an email or text. Learn more at allybank.com.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. We've heard complaints for years about what China's currency is doing to the U.S. economy. Washington says the yuan is undervalued and that that's making it much easier for China to sell cheap goods to us and harder for us to sell anything to them. Well, late yesterday, the Senate took up a controversial bill co-sponsored by New York Democrat Charles Schumer.
American businesses have said enough is enough. When is this government going to say enough is enough instead of just twiddling our thumbs and hoping and praying that China might change out of the goodness of their hearts?
Apparently, the answer to that question is October 11th, 2011, also known as yesterday. The Senate passed the bill, which would allow the U.S. to slap tariffs on products from countries that are undervaluing their currencies. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz has more from Shanghai.
In 2005, a group of senators blamed China for stealing American jobs by undervaluing its currency. In retaliation, they wrote a bill that would have imposed tariffs on Chinese products. As economist Arthur Kroeber remembers, it didn't pass.
They said that the Chinese currency was 25% undervalued against the U.S. dollar. Since that time, the Chinese currency has appreciated by more than 25% against the U.S. dollar.
But now, the same senators have authored pretty much the same bill. Despite the currency's appreciation over the years, they even have the same complaint. The Chinese yuan is still 25% undervalued. The Chinese reaction to this resembles a street full of blaring horns. Shanghai businessman Qin Bin ignores the honking and spouts off an angry reaction himself. The Americans are just looking for someone else to blame for their own economic problems, Qin says. The state-run media today ran with headlines threatening the U.S. with a trade war should the newest currency bill become law. Economist Kroeber says no need for currency weapons. All the Chinese would need to do, he says, is take the case to the WTO. And as the Obama administration has already hinted, China would likely win. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz from Marketplace.
Well, votes are expected today on Capitol Hill on some long-delayed free trade deals with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama. The pact with South Korea would be the biggest trade deal since NAFTA 16 years ago. Here's our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale.
The White House says the Korean deal will mean some $11 billion in new U.S. exports every year and will create or save 70,000 jobs. Since Korea has little agriculture, American farmers are looking for some new customers for everything from poultry to peanuts.
They eat a lot of pork.
Mary Nelson is vice president of Kemin Industries, which sells ingredients to Iowa pork farmers. She expects that lower tariffs on all kinds of meat will mean more exports, even though U.S. pork still won't be the cheapest on global markets.
I think U.S. pork is good pork. I think it's one of the best quality pork, and they like good pork.
Koreans also have a taste for U.S. dairy products. Cheesemakers are looking for a 50% increase in exports. And Koreans are hoping to sell more steel to American construction companies and semiconductors for American computers. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mostly higher in overseas trading this morning, up about 1% in Hong Kong and a fraction of 1% across Europe right now. We'll get earnings this morning from PepsiCo, which hopes to offset the weak economies in North America and Europe with booming business in emerging countries. They account for 30% of the company's revenue. On Wall Street yesterday, a mixed day. The Dow ended 16 points lower at 11,416.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, committed to empowering professionals of the world with the knowledge needed to do what they do best, the knowledge effect. By Reputation.com, helping small business owners, professionals, and executives monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations, Reputation.com. And by Allianz, managing more than $2 trillion in assets and providing investment solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com.
It's sort of unbelievable to hear this when the unemployment rate in this country is as high as it is, but almost 80% of American manufacturers are having trouble finding skilled workers for their factories. That's according to the latest study from the Manufacturing Institute. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner talked to one manufacturer who's trying to tackle that talent gap himself.
Jeff Kelly is CEO of Hamel Manufacturing in Trafford, Pennsylvania. His dad started the company in 1952, machining and welding metal parts, mostly for Navy submarines and aircraft carriers.
We actually started with the Nautilus, which was the very first nuclear submarine.
Kelly's company still makes parts for Navy ships. He employs about 130 people, but his baby boomer employees are retiring, and he can't find enough workers to take their place. Manufacturing, Kelly says, has an image problem.
Dull, unexciting, boring, maybe difficult.
Dirty and dangerous, too. But nowadays, this ain't your grandfather's factory, Kelly says. Most manufacturing floors are small, clean, and computerized. Kelly tells kids that when he scours local high schools for future employees.
We start looking at kids when they're in their ninth grade. We talk to the teachers, and we find out who's a potential young person that would come into our business.
For Kelly's company, that means kids who aced trigonometry and have good spatial acuity and mechanical skills. Emily DeRocco, president of the Manufacturing Institute, argues this talent shortage has serious implications.
We cannot sustain as a nation a strong economy if we don't continue to be a nation that makes things.
CEO Jeff Kelly is training 10 young apprentices right now, a refreshing addition to his aging workforce. The average age in manufacturing, around 45. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And finally to General Mills, which has been working for years to reduce the sugar content of its kids' cereals from around 15 grams per serving down to 10. The company makes Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Trix, and
Chocolate Lucky Charms!
They're magically delicious!
Well, maybe not so much without the sugar. A top General Mills official told the Wall Street Journal that if the company cuts the sugar content anymore, nobody will want to eat what's left behind. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Anopheles finestis, a humble mosquito, the most efficient and costly carrier of malaria that there is.
Malaria consistently costs the subcontinent of Africa over $40 billion a year because one out of four members of the workforce is absent due to malaria.
I'm Kai Rizdal, changing the world one dead mosquito at a time. It's next time on Marketplace from APM American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.